I was about to say it's another Friday afternoon, but I won't. I'm in the company of a gentleman who I have a great respect for and a great rapport with, I should say.
Hello. Afternoon, yeah. Peter. Oh, that's me. I'm Giles Heap from CED.
CED Natural Stone, and you might best remember them as one of the first companies who put their hands in their pocket and said, we're going to make your trip to Chelsea 2018 a little bit lighter. We'll get to that in the show. I'll just press this button here and the intro jingle will play.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sod Show Garden Podcast.
For you listening at home, we're back in the same car park. That's not that London College of Garden Design placed me here. It was that I actually said, well, the ambient sounds would be a little bit better. And now I'm fearful that there'll be a bit too much. So it's a bit windy. And I hope it's okay for you listening at home. I'll start with the start and I'll leave the intro bit till after. But this series of episodes is actually supported by London College of Garden Design and not by you. But I did say, I think there was an episode that I titled An Impromptu Thank You. And in that it was essentially that when you're doing a podcast on a budget and things can be a little bit tight, I have to give you credit as a company between you and Howard. And I don't know what was the catalyst and I'm unsure why, but you did support it.
There's lots of reasons. I think that the basic reason is I like what you do. I like the fact that it's an informal chat with some of the best people in the industry. And it's fun, you know, and we need to spend a little bit more time enjoying ourselves and listening to people who've got something decent to say. And quite frankly, you do it in a nice way. Now I've kissed your ass enough. What's the next question?
I like the Irish spin on things. But it's one thing to say I enjoy what you do, and that's always appreciated when, I guess, a listener says that. But when somebody says, no, we're going to go a step further, which is what you did, and I'm not accepting the posterior kissing, I guess I'm paying you a compliment, irrespective of whether it was me or another.
There are a lot of shows out there that are very formal, very planned, quite frankly, most of them are boring as hell. And I think that something about the Sod Show is it just encourages the true person to come out. And you, as an interviewer, you do that. And, you know, in our industry, we've got some great characters. We really have. But you don't get to see the real side of them most of the time. I'm lucky, I do. I get to meet them, I get to work with them, I get to, you know, occasionally drink with them. And they're fantastic people. But to try to understand that through a formal interview done by some big radio company or big broadcasting house or another, you just don't get that feel of personality. And landscaping and garden design should be about personality. That's my thought. You know, it's real. And to see someone like you who's doing it basically because you love it, then that to me is worthwhile helping out if you can, and we can. And look, at the end of the day, it wasn't massively expensive, but I just think it's a great thing.
If this was roles reversed, I'd get extremely embarrassed. The guy who takes the photographs is actually security here, has just walked past and waved at me, so that's what that distraction was. I want to take this as, I don't really have a plan, but I'd like to.
I never have a plan.
I'd like to think that this, if you were a plant grower or a plant breeder or a garden designer, and stone and surfaces and finishing for the greater has evolved massively from when I first began, and people used to make their own concrete slabs and then got a little bit fancy Dan and threw some aggregate, better known as pebbles, into the top of it, or in some cases I used to see seashells put into them. Yeah. Can you explain to the listener at home what that was 30 years ago?
That was innovation. I think that was the industry crying out for something more interesting.
But it was made from a timber set. Explain that bit.
The timber set? Blimey. Now you're going back. Well, I never really had that down here. It was never really... a popular thing in the southeast. You know, and I cut my teeth down here, really. It's only been the last few years, or last 10 years, that we've started moving, you know, over the rest of the world in a big way.
For those of you listening at home, what I'm referring to is you used to get four pieces of timber. You'd essentially bolt them together. You'd pour concrete into the four pieces of timber, which made up a square. And when it set, you had a concrete slab. And then you decorated it. And that was a little bit domestic pre-1980s. We're back to the Cliff Richard stuff all over again. If you had hard landscaping, that's what it was. Or else it was maybe crazy paving. No, crazy paving, is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's probably is fair, actually. There wasn't a lot of choice back there. And I have to say, if you think I actually remember that kind of concrete set stuff, then I look a lot older than I really am. Yeah. You know, back in the 70s and even the early 80s, there wasn't a huge choice. It wasn't really till the sort of mid-80s when we started to look at other products from other parts of the world. You know, French granites were the first thing to come over, really. And then shortly after that, Indian sandstones and Chinese granites. And then we had the whole world of products to look at. And with the more unusual materials that we bring over, then the more people ask, well, have you got this? And can you find that? And what's new? So now the whole industry is driven to find something new and amazing, you know, every 6 months. And funnily enough, actually, you mentioned that the concrete and putting pebbles, that's actually coming back in now. You know, I'm working on, I know, you raise your eyebrows. I'm working on a couple of schemes with designers, landscape designers commercially, who want to create that look. Not quite sure where that's going, but it just, everything goes round.
What we're doing here now, unknowns to me, but better knowns to you now, is that we're going through the trends, essentially, and we'll come up to 2018 eventually, I promise. But I did a garden talk, I think it was a couple of months ago, on essentially 300 years of landscape design and how it's evolved. And when I got to the 80s, I said there was the log roll epidemic, and then we hit the cob block pandemic, and then we went to everything was sandstone and bamboo. Mm-hmm. Or it became decking and bamboo. Mm-hmm. Then it went into grow your own, which is always invariably tied in with times of recession.
Indeed.
After World now Wars in particular. And now we've gone to what is the new thing, which has become essentially houseplants in landscaping, in the great outdoors, to backtrack it. When we hit that sandstone thing, it lasted a bit before it started to get in my nerves. And what I do remember is there was one that was extremely porous and one that wasn't so porous, and one was the cheaper quote, a bit like the bamboo that grew to 45 foot tall, and one wasn't a Phyllostachysoria, it was a Fargesia, which grew to maybe 8 foot tall. And so I lost some jobs, which I didn't mind, and on the other hand, I didn't. How pandemic epidemic did the sandstone thing get?
It got bloody ridiculous. It got to the stage where every single garden effectively was using Indian sandstone. But I think a lot of that was also because some of it was awful. God, there was some crap that came in. And still is, I have to say. But some of it's actually not too bad. But it enabled people to have something a little bit different. It enabled them to have a natural stone at a price that the common guy could afford. We hadn't had that before. We just hadn't. It was Yorkstone, or possibly something from Europe. Maybe some local stuff. But there was nothing really nationally that came in a big way. So when the Indian stuff landed, being able to buy something for 25, 30 pounds a square metre was unheard of. And it took off. And it took off in a massively big way. And it still does. But nowadays, you can pick up some of it for less than 10 pounds a square metre. I wouldn't say it would last very long, but that's mostly because it's too thin. But it is a... Oh, God, I'm bored of it. It's been around a long time now, I have to say, and it's time for something else.
When I look at the displays that CD Stone had at the landscape show, when I look at your product brochures online, when I scroll through your website, when I see the amount of gardens you were involved with at Chelsea Flower Show 2018, was it six gardens you had an involvement in?
Yeah, there were six or seven major involvements, and another half dozen or so reasonably major involvements. And then there were people who just generally speaking bought stuff from us because they were doing a garden at Chelsea, not that we had any direct involvement in.
If you miss a few, I'll add a few in, but do you remember who the ones at Chelsea were?
Oh, God, no.
No. She knows.
Nelson syndrome.
Oh dear. No, to be honest, I get to a stage almost where Chelsea goes and then Hampton Court happens. And you get so involved in then having to deal with Hampton Court, I completely forgot what happened to Chelsea. So the reality is, unless I actually literally sit down and think for 10 minutes, I'm going to go, I haven't got a bloody clue who we'd help to Chelsea. Because it's just gone now.
Jonathan Snow was one. Naomi Ferrer-Cohen.
Yeah. Naomi, I think Paula dealt with her more than I did. Oh, God. It's so embarrassing, but I actually really can't remember them.
Like, I know Kate Gold, Joe Thompson, Matt Keightley, former guests of the show. Maybe if they did something, others would turn around and say, well, inverted commas, quote unquote, I want that Chelsea look. And they say, well, the stone that I used is X from C, D. In Jonathan Snow's case, probably a decent example on Main Avenue, Chelsea. Do you have or have you seen a rise in requests of that stone that maybe Jonathan used as a result of that?
To a degree, yes, you do. I think a lot of it depends on more on general trends. I mean, I've worked with Kate a number of times and Joe. And I find that some of the designs and ideas that come through, if they're not completely off the wall, a lot of it's been done already. Now, I'm lucky in that working with people like Kate and Joe, they do tend to come up with unusual ideas. And for me, that's a great challenge. They give me a drawing and go, I want to make that. And once I've picked myself back off the floor and stopped laughing, then we find a way to make it happen. I mean, a good example is actually Adam White's garden at Hampton Court last year. And we did the wild garden with him. And he came to me and he said, look, I want to create this garden. And this is what I've sketched out. And it was instantly apparent to me that the way to deal with this was to create sliced boulders. So we basically took a big 8.5-ton boulder and sliced it into paving. And that was perfect for what he wanted. And we've been doing sliced boulders for a few years, quietly. But since then, I've seen more and more and more people start to use sliced boulders. Indeed, I think we had a couple of gardens at Hampton Court that had sliced boulders in them. And more people are starting to realise, actually, this is quite nice because it's an organic sort of shape. And your question about trends earlier, the trend I'm now seeing is designs moving more away from very, very rectangular, square, straight lines back into a little bit more organic movements. Now, whether that's a sign of our times and maybe we're getting a little bit fed up with being told what to do all the time, but that is a trend that I am seeing. And actually, I've been kind of seeing people moving towards larger, I don't want to say crazy paving, but crazy paving. For probably a year or so, I suspect that's something that will come through in time. But it's not a material choice, it's a design choice, or design change, if you like. Because there isn't really an awful lot new that's coming in, unless you want to talk about porcelain, which is a big tile.
How long are you working with CED, or how long are you in the stone industry?
CED for 23 years. I worked for a quarry before that for a year. I was asked by my dad to come into the company when I was about 22, and I said, I'm not coming in unless I can bring something to the business. And previously to that, I'd been a publican. I've had 3 pubs in and around London. I'd been a doorman, a bodyguard, diplomatic chauffeur, postman, managed a petrol station. Standard stuff, for a few years, all a bit weird. And he said, look, can you come and join up? I could do with some help. So I said, well, yeah, I don't mind doing that, but I don't know anything really about the industry other than the 14 very strange family holidays that we'd have when I was a kid, like, a week in the top of a fjord in Norway so that we could go and have a look at a glacier, mostly because he really wanted to see the stone quarry that was next door. He said, okay, that's fine. So he arranged for me to spend 9 and a half months working in a quarry in Yorkshire, which was fantastic for me. Don't get me wrong, it nearly killed me. Because that's really hard work. But I did. I spent 9 months working in the quarry, learning from the quarry owner, who was a true old-fashioned quarryman, a guy called Cedric Gilson. And I learned more in that 9 months about stone than I've probably ever learned since. Wow. I learned how to look at it. I learned how to understand it, to see it, to quarry it, how to produce it, how to understand why it does what it does. And that for me was an amazing learning curve. And I didn't realise how much I'd learned until I'd been in the industry for a few years. When I started, it all started to come together. From there, I finished there on a Friday evening. I drove back home, back down to Brentwood. On the Monday morning, I was up at 5, drove to Maidstone to work on a site outside Maidstone Town Hall, as it happens. And it turns out I was laying the Yorkstone paving, the same Yorkstone paving that I'd loaded on a lorry the Friday before. And that was kind of cool, because I not only did I watch it come out of the ground and be processed, I actually did that, and then I actually helped to lay it. So I spent about 3 months on site, understanding a little bit about contracting as well. And I also understood very much that I really hate early mornings. And that's never gone away. And then I joined CED, and I've been there sort of 23 years now.
What's the biggest change? I'll give you a funny one. This came up in conversation maybe recently about carrots. And so, yeah, well, I'm trying to give one that's entirely different. But that they went from being on a supermarket shelf, which was just any carrots, grade 1, 2, 3, into a bag, so long as they weren't totally bruised and blemished, to all the same size, all the same length, all pre-washed. And then we came in an organic era where the green part of the carrot was being left on and they were being laid loose. It was almost like we went full circle again back to the old grocer shops, except we were in a supermarket. When I look at the stone ranges now, that I don't need to go to a garden centre to pick up tree slabs on my grifter. What was the other? A chopper, that was the one I wanted. I wanted
No, they were, you couldn't put three slabs on a chopper. They were impossible to ride those.
Yeah, but everybody wanted to be Dennis Hopper.
This is true.
To stone stuff. When I go back and look at that now, and I still say above all other things, you can turn around and say, well, we've got Hebe Rakiensis aren't used anymore. Or you can say, well, maybe the one of the choices, you know, we've got a new variety of hellebore or hellesnore, as some people call them, but or cotoneaster or whatever floats your boat. Hydrangeas are probably the classic one that have changed from the old mop heads into the Annabelles. And when I look at stone, it's the most understated, least amount of interviews I've ever done ever. This is probably the first one on it, on a surface or on a product that we buy so much of. Therefore, then now, up to speed within those 23 years, how has it changed? Because even how they market bands, how they market music, how they sell music, everything has changed massively. And in your department, I might have read about a new stone slab if I subscribed to the English Garden magazine. Other than that, by mail order, I didn't see anything about it.
One thing that's changed in our industry, I think it's the same in every industry, and that's digital marketing. You know, and that has changed the way that companies, suppliers like us, and designers and clients can search for and look at new materials. It's unfortunate. It seems to be more important to have a good digital brand than it does to have a good service or a good knowledge. And the one thing I've seen over the last 5 to 10 years, definitely the last 5 years, are a lot of online companies and branding themselves in the same way that Apple did. You know, and everyone went, wow, this is amazing. It's the new best thing. Actually, it's not. It's exactly the same. It's just in a different packaging. And half the time, it's not as good. I've seen a lot of that. But I think that the materials themselves, they don't change. Stone doesn't really change. You can't grow a new stone. You can't grow a new type, you know, a new species. It just doesn't happen. You might be able to find something new, but even that's been around a few million years. The truth is, stone doesn't really change much. What does change is the ability to find materials or stones that we haven't had before. In that case, I think it is a lot easier to do that because of the internet, but it's also a lot easier to get the wrong stuff because of the internet. So it's that old saying, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. And I think there's quite a lot more, there are a lot more sources now than there ever used to be, but I don't think they're all necessarily very good ones. The biggest change I've seen is not actually to do with stone, it's to do with the understanding of construction with stone. 50 years ago, 100 years ago, everything we used to lay was unbound. We didn't have cement mortars, we didn't use them, not particularly. After the war, we had nothing but concrete, and then everything had to be bound, so we used to have to cement mortars. Nowadays, actually, there's quite a big push towards unbound, in other words, no cement in your mortar, laying stuff loose. That I'm starting to see more of. It's starting to come around again. So from a general change, materials, the products don't change. You can't grow them. But we're now starting to look at what maybe we did before and go, actually, that worked quite well. Because we've got cobbled streets all over the UK that have been down for 200 years.
Is what you're getting at, I'll give you a funny one. I saw, I don't know, I don't watch a whole lot of TV. I was waiting to speak to a client. I don't know who the guy was. I apologize sincerely, but he had a crack between paving and a piece of timber, which I gather was a herb bed. And he grabbed a handful of compost or soil and ran it down the crack, stamped it in and threw some lettuce seeds on it. And he went, you know, that's enough for pick and come again. Two, the stat that went out on a sod show about 3-4 years ago, where the amount of front gardens in London in particular that were being concreted in, which I think was something like 80 football pitches per annum, and how it was adding towards the flooding in London. And at the time, I remember reading about them designing a pipe to go underground, and rather than it just going down so the water went straight down the quickest point away, they were putting a swirl or a twirl in the pipe to delay the water hitting where they wanted it to go. And I remember thinking, this is crazy.
Seems a bit much.
It's nuts. However, living in London and having lived in London, I'm not saying I recommend it, but I can appreciate why people would concrete in everything in order to get an extra car in and get an extra level on the house, and they don't make land in London anymore, as my dad used to say. Is what you're suggesting, that whole porosity, that let the water fall down through, that consideration for the environment, that knowing where the stone has come from, now that we also sell porous cobble and porous stones to allow water at least perforate through it, is that what you're getting at, that we're being a little bit more considerate of what's happening around us? Or, as one client said to me, when my daughter at 6 years of age is saying, "Mom, we need to plant a buddleia," and I'm having a horticultural disagreement with the six-year-old, you know you're heading towards the right place.
Yeah, I think we woke up to the fact that we seriously need to look at what we're doing in the world, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. It took a little while to land in, especially into London. Yeah, we had some pretty heavy floods a few years back. From that, all the councils went, hang on, we've got to have SUDs, sustainable urban drainage systems, whatever they're called. And it all became legal. You know, you had to find a way to make sure that any water that landed on your premises stayed on your premises, if at all possible. From that, the industry has been driven to find solutions. Your twisty drain, you know, is one of those solutions. Is it the right one? No, who knows? But it enabled people like myself and other landscape designers to go, well, hang on a minute, why don't we just let rain drain through the surface? There are ways of doing it. And those ways have been developed and understood better. And now we're at the stage where not only can we have an unbound surface that is permeable, we also have bound surfaces which are permeable. So we can have hard concrete standing or hard paved standing, which allows huge amounts of rain to wash through it straight into the ground. So the environmental issues that we had 5-10 years ago, I think, have actually made us think, well, they have made us think, what can we do to make it better? On top of that, yes, there's a much greater awareness of environmental pressures. My 7-year-old, she's the same, she came home from school last week and said to me, "Daddy, can we stop using plastic, please?" And I went, "No, but we can try to reduce it. We can't physically stop, because so much that we do is based around plastic." And to be honest, I'm going to be a bit controversial here. Can I do that?
Yeah.
We sell plastic grass. We sell composite woods. Because we have to. But the landscape industry stands up and shouts out so much about, we've got to be sustainable, we've got to look at the environment, and yet we're actually using more and more plastic in our schemes. That's a little bit hypocritical. Now, I have to stand here and say, do you know what, I'm also being a bit hypocritical, because I do sell artificial grass, and we do sell composite wood, and actually they sell very well. And there's a place for it. But when you walk around a lot of exhibitions, and a third of the exhibition is based around plastic products, you have to ask yourself, are we actually going in the right direction here? Or is it just an addiction to an easy landscape?
That's actually a really tricky question, and I have to be honest with you. We didn't have a script for this.
Because I wouldn't have put this in there if we had.
No, so there's a bit of him and horn between us. I probably didn't pick the right location. The windy side of the city is what I picked. I do give you credit on raising the question and placing yourself slap bang in the middle of it. And you could have, I guess, on the other hand, just used this as a bit of an advertorial. And I might have edited it entirely out and just left some nice bits in. I wouldn't do that to you at home on it. But that goes back to what you were originally saying, which is you know what the sideshow is and how it rolls anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I know if I'm going to say something, it's going to go out there, so I'm being really polite right now. Or trying to be. But I'm putting myself in the middle of it a little bit. There's a lot of questions about the ethics behind stone. There's a lot of questions about the ethics behind concrete. Grass, plastics, I should say. And we can all come up with a great answer. But realistic, when it comes down to it, to me, the most important thing is if you're going to do something, make sure you only have to do it once. Whatever you're going to use, whether it be natural stone or concrete or plastic grass or plastic wood, make sure it's the best one you can get and it's going to last. Because there's nothing worse, in my mind, than a client spending between £500,000 and £500,000 on a design or a garden and it all starts falling apart in a few years. That is unsustainable. So if you're going to do it properly, use the right stuff. And if artificial grass is the right stuff for that particular area, go for it. But make sure it's one that's actually going to last.
I wanted to ask you, I've got two questions in my head now. I was only going to ask one. What stone have you got out your own back garden?
Funny enough, I've just moved to a house I absolutely love and I detest the patio, which is Indian paving.
Right.
And the house I had before had Indian paving, which I also didn't put down. So when I actually get to a stage when I can afford to change it, because I can't and I know how much it bloody well costs, I will change it for something else.
What would you go for?
I would actually probably choose Italian porphyry. Humble opinion, that's probably one of the nicest stones in the world.
You've got a cross between a suitcase, a briefcase and a medical operating kit. That's it's like something you'd... Hello? Hello? There's a guy making a phone call. He's not getting much luck there. Where was I? Oh yeah, suitcase. Yeah, no, I'm going to get one of them. And I'm going to stop talking while I'm trying to talk, man. I have to do this. I have to sound professional. Do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? I made you. Yeah, isn't it? I'm playing a role reversal here. Okay. If I'm
right, go on.
Okay. I've lost my total train. The medical case. Yeah, no, I'm going to look up. I'm going to stop. You're doing it again, man. We'd be like a bad double act on stage. I'm going to look that one up as well. I'll do. I'll get a photograph and I'll stick it out on the Sideshow Instagram thing. But if you're stuck for anything we've said in between here and you want to get in touch with CED Stone, and I know we've played devil's advocate and we've dilly-dallied a bit and we've had a bit of crack. Yeah. I hope that this would be a good inverted commas industry conversation, and I think it has. I try not to be too kind to you, but I think you've not been too kind to yourself as well. Is that, yeah?
Yeah, okay. We are what we are, and none of us are gods, but we do have to do the best we can. And as long as we do the best we can, that's all we can ask for. Try and enjoy ourselves. That's what I do. Otherwise, it gets really boring and really hard work. So if you can't have a crack, what's the point?
From CED Stone.
I'm a serious businessman, honestly.
Yeah. It's been a real pleasure. Always good to see you, and always good to sit in your company, and you have a great team around you, and it's a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
I actually have to say something there. The team is my company is an amazing company, but it's only amazing because of the people that are in it. And I know that sounds really cliched, but we're very lucky. We've got some of the best people, I think, working for us. And I wouldn't be where I am now if it wasn't for them. So actually, this is a shout out to those guys. I think they do a great job, and I just hope they carry on believing.
So your man's back. He's back making his phone call. He's fucking so mad.
I restarted the phone. Julian,
Julian,
you're still there?
He's okay. We have to get it. Paul is the first person in the Stone Company I've bought a coffee for ever. A cappuccino, my apologies, and Howard's just a genuine lovely guy. I'm going to leave it at that. He's in the middle of making this phone call. Thanks for listening, folks. Have a great weekend.
Hello.
And cheers. Appreciate it. Thanks, Charles.
Thanks, Peter. Talk to you soon.